When you see a picture of an Asian carp, you say, boy, that's a big fish. Wouldn't it be kind of cool to catch one of those? Someday, fishermen in the Great Lakes might be able to catch them, but that would not be so cool because the Asian carp, for the lack of a better term, are bullies. They squeeze out other fish. And if they do, that Asian carp could become the only fish living in the Great Lakes. No walleye, no salmon, just the ugly Asian carp. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher on All Sides this morning. The carp is not here yet, but scientists and officials fear it is getting very close. One was caught in a river that links the Mississippi River with Lake Michigan. And Ted Strickland and other top officials demand the federal government do more to stop the Asian carp before it enters the Great Lakes. It's not like the federal government is ignoring the problem. It's spending up to $80 million to stop the invasion of the fish. Joining us to talk about this possible looming ecological crisis is Eugene Bragg. He is from the Ohio Sea Grant College Program, Stone Laboratory. Eugene, welcome.
Thank you.
And also John Navarro. He is a program administrator for the Ohio Division of Wildlife Fisheries Program. John, welcome.
Thanks, Mike.
Eugene, let's start with the basics. What is an Asian carp?
Well, the term Asian carp is actually a slight, just very slight pet peeve of mine. Mm-hmm. When you hear the term in North America, you're usually referring to, say, between 2 to 4 different species depending on context. And there are two that are of particular concern to especially Lake Erie waters. Those are the silver and the bighead carp. Unfortunately, I think that lumping them all as a singular Asian carp doesn't really convey what's really happening. It doesn't give an impression to the public who isn't necessarily familiar with all the myriad fish species with what's really going on. So the two big ones that are really concerning are the silver and bighead carp. The other two that are often lumped into that group are the black and the grass carps. And finally, the common carp technically is an Asian carp, even though it's been here for a very long time. It invaded here over 100 years ago.
So not all carp are the same?
Certainly not.
The silver and the bighead carp, that's the fish that you're concerned about?
Yes.
Why so?
They're big animals. They're planktivores, meaning they eat a lot of plankton, so they crop very close to the base of the food chain. So they have the potential to thin energy flow up through the entire system, all the way up to the game fish that you and I think are important.
So they're not eating the game fish. They're eating the food supply for the,
exactly,
for the game fish.
Like the very base of the food supply that fuels the whole system all the way up.
Can this fish really – can one or two species of fish really threaten all the other fish in the Great Lakes?
Certainly. There is plenty of precedent. The Great Lakes have a long and unfortunately sad history of ecological invasion, radically changing the system. And just look at the two species of mussel, the zebra and the quagga mussel, and how radically they changed the system.
John Navarro from the Division of Fisheries and Wildlife. How is this different than other invasive species that have come into the lake?
Well, I think it has the opportunity to just overwhelm the system. I mean, they're very prolific. They're filter feeders, like Eugene said, and they have the ability to filter out large quantities of food that the larval fish would eat. And like Eugene said, the Great Lakes have had quite a number of invasions, and you just wonder if the next invasion is going to be the one that crashes the whole system. And I think bighead and silvers have an opportunity to crash the Great Lakes.
How did they get here? If they are, they are from Asia, so there is some accuracy in the nickname we've given them. How did they get here?
Certainly. Well, the silver and bighead carp, they were brought here to keep aquaculture ponds clean. So that was part of a farming operation. They thought that they would eat the plankton and clear the water.
This is for catfish farming and
aquaculture farming in general. And, you know, floodwaters comes over some of these ponds, and sometimes these things escape.
So they were shipped over here. They didn't come over in the belly of a ship or something like that.
Not in this case, no.
This was an intentional, kind of like the gypsy moth, which was brought here they're hoping for
certainly
a cheap imitation of the silkworm.
It was certainly intentional in contained ponds that are used to farm fish. Mm-hmm. It was not intentional to get it into our wild waters.
How did that happen?
Floodwaters.
Floodwaters.
Flood comes over a pond, and nobody's certain where this happened. Mm-hmm. I believe the current way of thinking is it happened somewhere in Arkansas to start.
Mm-hmm. 292-8513, if you'd like to join our discussion. Do you have a question or a comment about fishing on Lake Erie and the other Great Lakes as we anticipate or as the fear grows that the Asian carp, the silver hit, and the big head carp invade Lake Erie. 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. John Navarro from the Division of Wildlife and Fisheries, what has this fish done as it's moved its way north? It's coming up the Mississippi River, basically, right?
Yeah, it's basically overwhelmed the system. Any sampling they do now, over 90% of the biomass, which is the weight of fish of what they're catching, is made up of silver and big head carp. So it's just they're a big part of the ecosystem in the Mississippi River, and they're not catching as many as the native fish as they used to. So they're just, like you said, they're bullies. Mm-hmm.
This is a 100-pound fish, right? The big ones?
They can get up to 100 pounds. Yep.
And how much plankton do they eat?
A lot.
I've heard 40% of their body mass or figures like that.
Figures like that. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but a lot.
Well, you figure if you weigh 100 pounds and you're a fish and you're swimming all the time, you got to eat a lot to survive.
When 90% of the fish biomass is these things, you can see how it has the potential to really thin, again, the flow of energy from plankton up through the whole system.
Now, it came out late last month in late June that one was spotted, one was caught in a small river that connects the Mississippi to Lake Michigan. Why is one fish a concern?
One fish, if it is one fish, isn't a concern. But these things aren't easy to catch. So if you see one, it's likely that there are more around. And there are the latest press release was fish observed in the upper reaches of the Wabash River. They've been observed in very close to Lake Michigan in the whole Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal system for quite some time. So all of these are of concern. Now, the concern of the Wabash sighting is it's very close to the headwaters of the Maumee. The Wabash is on the Ohio River, the Mississippi drainage. The Maumee is on the Lake Erie drainage. And frankly, of the Great Lakes, Western Lake Erie is the one place in the whole of the Great Lakes that is really hospitable to these animals.
Quick geography lesson, the Wabash, where does it run? And that's in Indiana, correct?
It's in Indiana, yes. And the headwaters of the Maumee are also in Indiana, very close to the headwaters of the Wabash.
Okay, and that flows into the Great Lakes.
Yes.
And the problem with that is there's the potential for flooding to connect those two rivers, mm-hmm. and that's what they're concerned about.
Why are they hard to catch?
They're very sensitive. Carps in general are very sensitive. They're really big animals. They feel electricity coming from a long way away. They're shy around nets. They're just very sensitive to the world around them and very skittish.
So a sensitive bully.
Yes.
Exactly. Interesting. 292-8513. If you'd like to join in our discussion, we're talking about the possible invasion of the Asian carp, for the lack of a better term. It's threatening the Great Lakes, and the officials fear it could threaten the Great Lakes' $7 billion fishing and fishing-related tourism industries. John Navarro from the Ohio Division of Wildlife and Fisheries, what's the solution?
Well, the solution is to keep them out.
How do we do that?
Well, in the case of the Chicago Sanitary Ship Canal, they do have the electric barriers that are supposed to hold them back, but the fact that they've made it past the barrier leads to the idea that they've made it past the barrier. So the electric barrier was a short-term solution. It's not the long-term solution. What Governor Strickland and other legislators are pushing for is a separation of that the two watersheds, which is a physical separation where there is no movement.
So there's actually a dam there
with
some kind of diverting device to keep the fish out. Some water through, but the fish out.
No, actually no water.
No water
fish.
At all.
Correct.
Obviously, the shipping industry, the barge industry near Chicago is not a big fan of that plan.
No, they're not. They're, losing jobs is a bad thing, and there will be an economic impact if that is disconnected. But putting that up against the money that is brought into the Great Lakes, which is many billions of dollars in tourism, I just don't think that a small component of a shipping industry should trump a system as big as the Great Lakes and as important as the Great Lakes.
The electric barriers, how do they work? Is it an electric fence underneath the water? What exactly happens there?
It's a series of cables. It's the same kind of concept as electrofishing, which is a tool fisheries managers use to collect fishes. So there is it produces a large electrical field in the water. larger fish, as they approach it, they'll feel it, and it's not comfortable, so they stay away from it. Mm-hmm. And in theory, if a smaller fish happens to swim into it, it'll be stunned and then washed back downstream.
That's what sometimes you'll see when they're doing a fish count in a pond. It's the same thing where they sort of zap the water, the fish come up, they're stunned for a bit.
The same concept, but, you know, a different intent.
Different, basically trying to keep them away. But that won't work with the Asian carp, even though they are sensitive, as you say?
Oh, potentially it will.
Okay.
The problem comes when the system fails. If unconscious fish are dragged through in the wake of a barge, if fish are drawn on through to a damaged barge, for example, that's taking on water, or if larval fish are taken in by a towboat as it ballasts down, it takes on the weight of water to pass under bridges. It could potentially take on larvae of these fish and carry them across the barrier. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's effective against the fish passage themselves, but there are lots of ways, unfortunately, around it. There are a lot of loopholes in a system like this.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from a listener. Any carp in the Scioto? Any Asian carp? Or
they've had records of them in the Ohio River, but it's just been one here or there, no established population. And we do get reports every once in a while of someone saying, hey, I think I found an Asian carp, and we'll send crews out to look for it. But nothing established in Ohio waters as yet we know.
Right.
The Chicago area path, which has gotten a lot of the headlines because it's pushing to shut it off completely. Is that the only way they can get into the Great Lakes? You mentioned the Wabash and the Maumee. And if you just cut off the Chicago route, won't the fish find some other way in?
Potentially. Mm-hmm. There are a number of connections, and John is probably as well-suited as anybody to talk about the connections in Ohio. But I do want to point out also that the Chicago connection is of concern, but because these animals are big planktivores, they're big animals that need to eat a lot of plankton, them getting into the lower reaches of Lake Michigan is a little less concerning, for example, than them crossing into the Maumee River, because Lakes Michigan and Huron, they're not very productive systems. They're big, they're deep, they're cold. They don't make a lot of plankton, so they're not very friendly to these animals. Functionally, these two lakes, Lake Michigan and Huron, are like deserts to these two species of Asian carps. But Lake Erie, if they get into western Lake Erie, and a handful of other sites that are very productive around the Great Lakes. But again, the connection in Chicago is very concerning, and there's the potential for them to get into Lake Michigan and hopscotch along the productive waters near the shore into western Lake Erie, but that's a long stretch. It's much more concerning if they happen to get into the Maumee. That's a direct connection to western Lake Erie.
So, John, how do you stop that?
You have to prevent those floodwaters from connecting, so some kind of system to prevent floods from going from one system to the other. And as you mentioned, there are two connections in Ohio, one of them being Grand Lake St. Mary's, which is a constructed lake, a part of the old canal system. Mm-hmm. And that one actually straddles two watersheds. So it could technically hop in one end and go out the other. Chances of that are really low. There's also a water diversion structure up in Akron, which diverts water from the Tuscarawas to the Cuyahoga and vice versa. And there's a bunch of potential there. But the fact that they're not even in close to those areas, those we're keeping an eye on, but those aren't the critical ones. The critical ones are the ones that Eugene was talking about, are the Chicago one and then the Wabash Maumee one.
An email from a listener, she writes, I know a university aquaculture specialist who told me that this carp cannot breed in the cold waters of the Great Lakes, so this is much ado about nothing. Is this person correct?
Not quite. Now, for the most part, much of the Great Lakes, I'm guessing I know which aquaculture person she spoke to, and I'm guessing she also, misinterpreted at least a little bit. The upper Great Lakes, steep tributaries, cold, gravel bottom streams, clear. Again, not very hospitable to big animals that like to eat a lot of plankton. Now, there are a handful of rivers around the Great Lakes that are very hospitable, and probably the very best suited is the Maumee River. Very turbid, a very long stretch of slow water. It's a perfect nursery area for these animals, very much like where it reproduces in China. Also, these animals get pretty far into northern China. So what they need is big, slow rivers that are relatively cloudy and very productive. If they have those, they do well. There aren't a lot of those around the Great Lakes, but there are some. And the most concerning is the Maumee on Western Lake Erie.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the looming invasion of the Asian carp to the Great Lakes and what can be done to stop that invasive species and others when All Sites continues on WOSU.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. Currently 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:22. There is a 40% chance of rain and maybe a thunderstorm throughout the day today. Otherwise, mostly cloudy and a high reaching near 86. A chance of rain tonight as well, mainly before 9 o'clock tonight, and then a few clouds and a low of 68 degrees. For Wednesday, sunshine and a warm day with a high near 91. Clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 71 degrees, more sunshine for Thursday, and a high of 93.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Ironically enough, the woman with the name Fisher doesn't get to talk about fish today. She left that to me. We're talking about the invasion of the Asian carp, or the possible invasion, the feared invasion of the Asian carp to the Great Lakes, in particular Lake Erie, threatening Ohio's $800 million tourism and fishing industry on Lake Erie because the Asian carp squeezes out other fish. Our guests, Eugene Bragg, he is the assistant director of OSU's Stone Laboratory, and John Navarro, he is with the Ohio Division of Fisheries and Wildlife. Let's go to the phone. Stephen has kind of a Stephen has a question about a local carp.
Carp. Well, I've got these carp from a fishery, and they were supposed to eat the grass out of my pond, and of course they've gotten quite large. The pond's maybe about a third to a quarter of an acre, and they've eaten everything completely, and now the pond's all muddy, and it's like they're like animals being kept in a small cage, you know, that they don't have enough to eat, and they're tearing a whole pond up. Are these the same kind of carp that are sterilized, and how do they sterilize them?
Yes. These are grass carp, white amur, and they're sterilized. As a fertilized egg, you can shock it and force it to retain some genetic material that's supposed to be expelled, and that functionally makes a sterile fish. And it sounds like you have just happened to put too many into your pond.
Well, I just have two. Originally, we had four, and we lost one, and then another one died, and the raccoons got that and cleaned it up quite well. And I'm trying to shock. We tried everything except for a deep-sea fishing pole and a shocker boat. I drugged the whole pond. They just jumped right over the net. Like, you know, it's nothing. They see you, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They look right at you, and they know.
They're really sensitive animals. They're hard to catch. One of the best tools, actually, is bow and arrow. If you're good with an arrow and you see him basking on shallow water.
We had a guy come over. My mother-in-law told me there was a guy that fished up in Michigan, and he used cans. And these fish would swim into these cans and couldn't turn around. And I thought of something like that. But another question I had was the St. Mary's Lake. Does that have zebra mussels in it yet? I would think it would, but I was just curious about that.
I think that's a lake that we have not found them in. I think it's because the habitat is just not there for zebra mussels. They really need hard substrate. And if you know, Grand Lake St. Mary's has a lot of silt substrate, so not really good for zebra mussels. it's amazing that they're not in there because it's heavily used by boaters and boats move around. So they actually could be in there, but we really don't have any records of high numbers of them.
So basically, Stephen is seeing what you fear could happen in Lake Erie.
In a way, the grass carp or white ammer is a different animal. And if it's not sterilized, it is one on that list of Asian carps that is of concern. Because the grass carp, as its name implies, it eats vegetation.
So the carp do serve – I mean, the certain species of carp do serve a very useful role.
Certainly. As management tools, yes. So a good example is a sterilized grass carp. Mm-hmm. But also I would argue that they're very important in the ecology of the places where they originated.
Which is Asia.
Yes.
How so?
Well, they evolved as part of a system there. Mm-hmm. So all the animals, the entire system around them evolved with them. The problem comes when you move them out of the system where they are native to, and then they create changes, and not necessarily changes you want.
Yeah, that's a good point. It depends on where you're at, because species that we think are really great, like yellow perch, walleye, northern pike, and other places, they're considered invasive. So it's all about where you're at.
Mm-hmm. 292-8513, if you have a question about the Asian carp and invasive species in general, as we talk about that on all sides, our guests are Eugene Bragg from the OSU Stone Laboratory and John Navarro from the Ohio Division of Wildlife and Fisheries. Let's talk about other invasive species. This has been an ongoing problem for Lake Erie. Is it started just with the industrial age when people would bring in fish from other parts of the world or other species from other parts of the world intentionally, or they hitch a ride on a ship, a cargo ship? When did the invasive species problem begin for Lake Erie and the Great Lakes?
It really began when ships first started coming into the Great Lakes. When they first crossed the ocean and brought ballast stone that had, for example, seeds, had the potential to carry seeds that could invade wetlands. But the numbers really shot up when the canal system connected the Great Lakes out into the St. Lawrence Seaway and out into the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm. So man-made waterways for industry.
Right. Either directly through the waterway or through ships carrying things in through the waterway. That's really when the numbers really shot up. We have over 180 species. Depending upon whose numbers you read, as many as 187 different species have become established in the Great Lakes.
And not all of them have the same impact that the Asian carp could have or the zebra mussel has had and that kind of the goby has had.
Yeah, what's amazing is there's varying levels of impacts. And when you think about the route that some of these take, like in a ballast water tank across the Atlantic Ocean, you wonder how many have made the journey and not become established. So to have 187 established, there's probably thousands that have tried to make the journey that haven't been successful. So that's kind of a testament to their ability to survive.
So how do you – it seems impossible to regulate this because you're not going to stop the shipping. You're not going to fill in all the canals. How do you monitor? How do you stop invasive species?
You do the best you can with what regulations you can. You ask for more stringent regulations on how ballast water is exchanged. You put barriers in place where it's possible. You keep out the things you can as best you can. It's not easy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Prevention is the key. You can put a lot of money into prevention and prevent having to spend 100,000 times that in control efforts. There's control efforts for sea lamprey, but that's just to keep them down to a manageable level. We'll never get rid of sea lamprey. And they're spending millions of dollars a year just to do that. So the key is prevention. Once they get in, control efforts are not really good efforts.
Okay. Paul, you're on all sides on WOSU. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, thank you. I was kind of curious, if you go out to the Columbus Zoo and go down to the river where you can get on the river rides and look over the side, there's just, always has been, a rather large number of carp there, I think because the people feed them. How do you know what distinguishes an Asian carp from other carp were there native carp here?
Carps they're in the minnow family, and carp is just kind of a generic word that means a really big minnow. So we have native minnows here, but the native minnows that live in Ohio are all very small. Common carp have very large scales. They have whiskers. The silver and the bighead carp have very small scales. They have eyes that are turned very far downward on the face. And they are open water things. You're not necessarily going to see them begging for French fries in the shallows.
And so what – I know you haven't – maybe you haven't seen them. What type of carp are those? Because these are large. I would guess them to be – well, they're certainly no minnow, but probably well over a foot to 2 feet long.
Oh, sure. They're common carp.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good.
Which, again, is an Asian invasive, but it's one that's been here for a very long time.
Let me ask a silly question. Can you eat a carp? Is it good eating?
You can eat a carp.
I'd rather eat yellow perch.
So it's not a fish that...
Many carp species are very important food fishes in Asia, including common carp. They aren't very well thought of here other than in a couple ethnic communities. The two species we're talking about mostly, the silver and bighead, do have fair quality meat, but it's very difficult to extract that meat. They have a really... thorough armor of internal bones that's difficult to work around.
And you've talked – this is not going to be a – you think of a 100-pound fish, yeah, it would be kind of great to land one of those. But it sounds like they're very difficult to catch and it's not going to be a good sport fish for Lake Erie if it ever
– No, they're a planktivore, so they're not going to be going after baits and stuff.
Right. As John implies, important sport fish are things that eat other fish or things that you can – put on a hook. Uh-huh. It's hard to put, you know, a bit of phytoplankton, a bit of algae on your hook.
Okay. We may have just answered Dan's question, but Dan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was curious, and you were talking about sport fishing there, and I fish up at Lake Erie a lot, and I know that's a big business, but have you thought about putting a bounty on these fish, so to speak, and so that these fishermen that go out with bow or other means of fishermen, I think these guys, I know a lot of guys are pretty in, you know, got a lot of smarts about catching whatever it is they want to catch. If there's a bounty on these things, a reward for bringing these fish in, have you ever thought about something like that and using the masses or the millions of sport fishermen out there?
Actually, they've tried to use, or they're using commercial fishermen in some areas to try to knock the population down. The problem is they might be catching 2-5% of the population, which leaves 95%. You're not going to effectively fish out a invasive species. I don't know, no matter what you use.
Not a sport fisherman couldn't really have an impact on the species.
So John mentioned commercial fishermen, and any commercial fisherman with a big commercial net is going to move a lot more fish than any sportsman can move.
Mm-hmm. And, right.
And regarding a bounty, if you want to really impact this population where 90% of the biomass, for example, in the Mississippi and parts of the Mississippi are now these fishes, who's going to pay that?
Yeah. Well, it seems like you're spending millions of dollars to keep it at bay. It just seemed like it might even be a cheaper route to go.
The commercial fishery, I think, is useful. Unfortunately, when the market gets flooded with these things that nobody wants, it's worth even less than it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Is it? I mean, if there was a, you know, like the fishermen are getting reward for bringing in those fish they want to keep and put on the market or whatever, but what about those other fish? Maybe it give them a little more enthusiasm about picking up these fish in their nets and turning them in for some kind of reward as far as payment goes.
Like Eugene said, you really need to develop a market for them, and there really isn't at this time.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Dan. 292-8513 if you'd like to join in our discussion. We're talking about the invasion of the Asian carp, the possible invasion, that is, the folks are hoping to prevent into the Great Lakes. 292-8513. Eugene, we talked about you mentioned briefly the whole sterilization. Is that a possibility for these two species of Asian carp that you're most worried about?
Not really. When we're talking about sterile grass carp, these are things that are produced in hatcheries and provided as a product to people who want them. So it's a very controlled number. There are sterilization programs in place for lamprey, for example, where they figure if they trap enough male lamprey, sterilize them, and then release them to the wild, then they spawn with females and effectively waste the spawn because it's not viable. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, though, animals that are difficult to catch, They aren't so vulnerable on the spawn as lamprey are, so it's hard to catch them and sterilize them. And we're talking about animals that are just hugely abundant.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Dennis, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I'm enjoying this program. And a little tongue-in-cheek humor. There are two things that are extremely good for junk fish, like carp and sheephead, that people just throw back in the lake. Now, if you take your carp or sheephead home with you, dig a hole, put the fish in there, and then plant a tomato, you'll have the best tomatoes you've ever had.
Still
That's
there?
It.
All right.
Thank you.
There's a good thing, good side of everything. All right. That's that goes from your second grade social studies class with the pilgrims learned from the Native Americans that you put a fish in with the corn and you get good corn. 292, other tips, fishing tips, other fish stories, 292-8513, 292-8513. So are you optimistic or is this inevitable, Eugene?
I'm always cautiously optimistic. There'd be no reason to go to work if I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I'm optimistic. And even if this particular invasion works its way through and wreaks horrific change, there's always the next invasion for me to work on not letting through.
Mm-hmm. John?
Cautiously optimistic like Eugene. The positive note is there's a lot of people out there that are working legislatively to prevent them from getting into the Great Lakes. The Strickland administration has been phenomenal on backing this effort, and Director Logan of the ODNR has, from day one, has taken invasive species and run with it. So a lot of smart people working on this, and your next guest, Tim Eater, would be one of them.
And that's a good segue. We'll go to our next – we'll go to a break, and then when we come back, we'll hear from a man, Tim Elder, who is the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission, which is working to try to get all of these states and provinces, even in Canada, to work together to stop this and other invasive species. That's when All Sides continues on WOSU.
On the next Fresh Air, what's wrong with psychiatry? Daniel Carlett says American shrinks are too busy prescribing drugs to actually talk to people.
Only 11% of all psychiatrists now offer therapy to all of their patients.
Carlett talks about the forgotten art of therapy and the influence of drug companies in his new book, Unhinged. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents a special Chefs in the City coffee tasting at Luck Brothers Coffee House in Grandview. Thursday, July 29th at 10:30 a.m. Join us and sample gourmet coffees and treats prepared by our feature chef, Brian Pollock of Deepwood Restaurant, and get a rare coffee take-home from Luck Brothers. You'll also be a part of a special WOSU TV production and learn how to brew the perfect cup of coffee. A limited number of tickets are on sale now. Get more information and reserve your tickets at wosu.org/chefs. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus. There's a 40% chance of rain today, otherwise cloudy skies, and a high of 86. A chance of rain tonight, mainly before 9, and a few clouds tonight, a low of 68. And then sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 91. This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and All Sides continues.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are discussing the invasion or the possible invasion of the Asian carp to the Great Lakes. This extremely large fish threatens to squeeze out other fish in the Great Lakes, hurting the region's fishing and fishing-related tourism industry. Joining us now is Tim Eater. He is the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission. The commission works to advance the shared interest of the states and the provinces that surround the Great Lakes. And Tim, welcome to All Sides on WOSU.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be here.
Can you explain what the economic impact could be on the Great Lakes if the Asian carp gets established there?
Well, it could be just simply devastating. I mean, right now, fishing and tourism are they're just economic powerhouses in the Great Lakes region, and I think people don't realize that tourism is one of the is one of the most important economic engines that we have in the Great Lakes region. In fact, I just read something that that tourism is as powerful an economic force in the state of Ohio as is the motor vehicle industry. They both account for about 114,000 jobs. Tourism is about a $10 billion. Tourism on Lake Erie alone is about a $10 billion a year industry, and that's roughly equivalent to what the state puts into or what the state benefits from in terms of motor vehicles. So it's substantial. Here in Michigan, where, of course, we've been absolutely slammed by the economic downturn, one of the only segments of our economy that's growing in the last couple of years is coastal communities, and that means recreation and tourism. And, of course, a lot of that is dependent on fishing and a healthy Great Lakes ecosystem. And if the concern, of course, is that if Asian carp invade the Great Lakes, there will be no turning them back. They will colonize the fishery. There's simply no way to control an invader like an Asian, like the carp are expected to be. And we would jeopardize all of that economic benefit.
We're speaking with Tim Eder. He's the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission. They work to help the Great Lakes get all the states and the provinces in Canada to work together to protect and to restore parts of the Great Lakes that perhaps have been damaged over the years. Tim, how do you get – let's start south of the border. How do you get all of the states here in the U.S. that border the Great Lakes or have an interest in the Great Lakes to work together?
Well, it's actually not that hard, Mike, because the Great Lakes are extremely important to all eight of the Great Lakes states, as well as Ontario and Quebec. The Great Lakes are important economically, and they're important ecologically, and the states simply care. And so when it comes to doing the right thing and protecting the ecology and working to promote the economy of the region, we simply have to put forth the good ideas, good policies. We have to have a good target for what we're trying to do, and that often is the federal government. Our business is often trying to persuade the federal government to do a better job or provide more economic support, funding, and legislation. So it's really not that hard because the states recognize how important the lakes are.
But you'll come into hurdles like you face in Illinois and Chicago in that there's resistance to one solution, which is to shut off the waterway linking the Mississippi to Lake Michigan. The barge owners and the barge industry in Chicago does not want to see that happen. Politicians who represent those folks don't want to see that happen. So you will find issues that do separate the states on occasion.
Well, on occasion, but one of the things that is important to keep in mind, Mike, is that when it comes to Asian carp, there has been a difference of opinion about whether or not what to do in the short term in terms of the locks, and the concern there is the barge industry as well as the potential impact on flooding and water management. But that's the short term question. The real long term solution that all of the states recognize and there is no disagreement on is that there ought to be a separation of the Great Lakes from the Mississippi watershed. In other words, the city of Chicago back in the early part of the late part of the 19th century, around the turn of the century, reversed the flow of the Chicago River. They made the Chicago River flow down to the Mississippi, and that created an artificial connection that connects the Great Lakes to the Mississippi River. And so the solution that all of the states agree on is that the best fix to prevent Asian carp from invading the Great Lakes is to separate the waterway.
Why was the river reversed? Was it obviously because of commerce, I'm guessing?
No, it wasn't actually. It was because the city of Chicago's wastewater was being discharged into Lake Michigan, which is where they got their drinking water, and people were dying because of typhoid and cholera, and they were drinking their own waste. So the purpose of the reversal was to send the wastewater downstream to St. Louis and other parts that other places that didn't want it at the time, but they ended up with it.
So can you shut off the Mississippi from the Great Lakes
with no adverse economic impact?
Well, there will be an impact. Whether or not it's a net negative impact remains to be seen, and that's the purpose of some studies that are being contemplated. And you know, the fact of the matter is that Chicago is a major transportation hub for this country. I mean, everybody knows that trucks and trains and rail and airplanes all converge in Chicago. Much of our commerce moves through the region, and there's a tremendous amount of congestion right now. Is it possible to reroute that traffic that uses the waterway in such a way that separates the Mississippi from the Great Lakes but does not negatively impact transportation and commerce? And we think there probably is, but we need to do the study. We need to see the studies. We need to have the studies done to prove that. I think the bottom line, Mike, is that with the appropriate level of effort and resources, we can make the system better. We can make the way transportation moves in and around Chicago more efficient, and we can protect the Great Lakes ecology. The same goes for wastewater and wastewater management, flood control. There are problems. The waterways in and around Chicago provide a benefit to moving floodwater and wastewater, and that has to be accommodated. Those uses, current uses, are important. But the question is, can we improve on those while at the same time separating the lakes and protecting the Great Lakes from Asian carp and other invasive species?
I know their studies are underway and you're calling for more studies, but any idea, even a ballpark figure, how much this might cost?
Unfortunately, I can't tell you that. It's too early in the study stage to know how much it might cost. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. It won't be cheap. There's no question about that. It wasn't easy to do it back in 1900. It cost a lot of money. But, you know, we're talking about a $7 billion sport fishery. We're talking about $10 billion of tourism and recreation on Lake Erie alone. So we're talking about some pretty big stakes here, and we have to bear that in mind when we consider the costs.
We're speaking with Tim Eder. He is with the Great Lakes Commission. He's the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission, an advocacy group trying to get states and provinces to work together to preserve and restore the Great Lakes. Tim, we mentioned earlier the problem with the Maumee and the Wabash. Mm-hmm. What's the solution there from the commission's point of view?
Well, I have to say, Mike, that we're not sure what the solution there is. The state of Indiana is actively investigating whether or not there's a potential, or I should say, how serious the potential for flooding is between the Wabash and Maumee. I don't know if you spoke about this earlier with your other guests.
Yeah.
But
it's a possible path for the fish to get into the Great Lakes as well.
Right. There is a potential for flooding. We don't know how frequent the floods occur, whether or not the amount of floodwaters would be sufficient to move carp or carp fry or carp eggs. We just don't know. We don't know enough about the risk, and we don't know enough about whether or not there might be places where you could put up a barrier or prevent the flooding from occurring. Simply don't know. It's too early in the process. We just found out about this within the last month. The state of Indiana has known that there are carp in the Wabash River. I don't think they realized that they were as far north or up towards the headwaters as they are. But a lot of people are just trying to figure this situation out and asking the same question you are.
Tim Eder from the Great Lakes Commission joins us on All Sides on WOSU talking about the Asian carp. Tim, how is the Canadian government, in particular the provincial governments in Ontario and Quebec, are they on board?
Yeah, they're very much on board. They're very concerned about this. The Canadian federal government has been very supportive of our efforts. The province of Ontario and the province of Quebec both contributed substantial resources when there was a exercise in the Chicago area back in December to use rotenone, a fish poison, to treat parts of the Chicago area waterway system. That was an expensive proposition, and all of the states and the two provinces contributed to the cost, along with the federal government, trying to eradicate whatever carp were in the system. So bottom line is that our neighbors to the north are very concerned about this as well.
Asian carp aside, this is just the latest in many invasive species that come in through a variety of pathways. Will you ever be able to keep invasive species out of the Great Lakes?
Well, it's too late to keep mm-hmm. them out completely. The question is, what can we do to minimize the likelihood that more species will get into the Great Lakes? And we have to confront this threat on all fronts, and we have to treat this as though it's a war. You know, one of the things that's unique about the Great Lakes is that they're relatively young. They're relatively young geologically, and that means that we don't have the same diversity of species and the same kind of evolutionary characteristics that we see on the oceans. So that means that the Great Lakes are more vulnerable to invaders. And so there are other pathways, including shipping. Ballast water in commercial shipping has brought in invasive species from foreign ports around the world. Canals and waterways like the Chicago system. Trade, just simply purchasing live organisms and the risk that the live organisms will be bought for the commercial food industry or the pet industry or aquaculture and horticultural gardens are other potential pathways by which non-native plants and animals could get released into the Great Lakes. So we do have to confront this on a number of different fronts and pathways.
And even with this, there's talk that this Asian carp started in the southern United States. Arkansas has been mentioned. I mean, regulations down there, people don't even think that it might affect, you know, Quebec in the economy surrounding Quebec and Ontario.
Well, people just didn't contemplate it when they imported carp down in the south to help them with their commercial fishing. And I understand that they were also used for wastewater treatment ponds in addition to commercial fishing down in the south. But you're right, they just had no concept. You know, one of the other things about the Chicago area waterway system is that it's not just a pathway for Asian carp into the Great Lakes. That has been the pathway by which zebra mussels left the Great Lakes and have now colonized much of the entire country. Zebra mussels have been found as far west as Lake Mead and throughout the Mississippi River system. So, and in fact, the electric barrier, there's an electric fence in the Chicago waterway system that you probably have talked about earlier mm-hmm. that's designed to keep the carp from migrating up the Mississippi into Chicago. That electric barrier system was designed to keep the goby, another small fish that we have here in the Great Lakes, it was designed to keep the goby from leaving the Great Lakes and moving into the Mississippi. That was its original purpose.
What's been the success rate of keeping invasive species in one spot?
Well, it's really difficult. We have not been successful in preventing zebra mussels and another mussel called a quagga mussel from spreading once they get released. The problem is they just simply take over and displace native species because they have no natural predators. We have made some progress in controlling invasive species from ships' ballast water, but we haven't done enough there. We made some progress when we required ships to begin flushing their ballast tanks out at sea to rinse them out, basically, before they came into the Great Lakes. But what we need to do with ships is we need to require them to install treatment technology to treat their ballast water discharge just like we treat discharges from industry and cities. We don't let industries and cities dump their waste directly into waters, and we have to have similar treatment technology put on board ships. But we have made some progress. That's the progress that we have made has reduced the risk, but it's not taken it away.
Tim Eder is the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission. We're talking about the invasive species problem with the Great Lakes, in particular Lake Erie, as it affects us here in Ohio. The topic right now is the Asian carp, and it's
trek northward and possibly into the Great Lakes. Tim, for folks who live on the Great Lakes, who fish there, own property there, support their business, supports the tourism industry along these waterways, they're very involved in this. But regardless of what the studies, this is going to cost, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars. How do you build public support away from the Great Lakes to that this is important and this is a worthwhile use of our tax dollars?
Well, one of the things that we try to communicate is just simply the fact that the Great Lakes are the source of 20% of the fresh water on the planet, and the Great Lakes are an extremely important national resource. They're not simply a regional resource, but I mean, this is the home of 90% of the fresh water in the U.S., 20% of all the fresh water on the planet, on the surface of the planet, and they're like the Everglades. They're like Yosemite and Yellowstone. They're not necessarily parks. They're working natural resources because we use them to generate electricity. We use them for commercial shipping. We've built our cities along them for good reason because they provide water and power for electricity and for manufacturing. So they're working natural resources, but they are natural resources, and they're national treasures. So we try to communicate that, and in fact, one of the things that I'll be doing tomorrow is testifying before Congress. Senator Debbie Stabenow has a committee on the Senate side that is holding a hearing on the Asian carp. So that's the kind of thing we do is testify before Congress and try to explain just how important these lakes are, not just to us here, but nationally.
Is it hard because all these species are underwater? You can't see them. I mean, it's not like pollution. It's not like when the Cuyahoga River was on fire. I mean, we all saw that and we're outraged by it. I mean, the zebra mussel, I mean, I wouldn't know if I stepped on one.
Yeah, the zebra mussel is more difficult to get people riled up about. But, you know, one of the things about these Asian carp is that they are big and they do leap out of the water. They come flying up out of the water and have the potential to hit and injure boaters.
But isn't just a lovely fish?
They are, aren't they? They're just a scary monster.
I mean, they live in sewage treatment plants.
That's right. they're just not a friendly creature. We don't want them in the Great Lakes.
So that's your selling point. Just put like wanted posters, you know, the
right.
Asian carp.
Right.
Are you optimistic that the Asian carp solution can be found?
Well,
in time?
I have to be. It's my job to be optimistic and to keep fighting. We simply have no other choice. We can do this. It's not too late. We have not lost the battle at all. We have an electric barrier that's in place and that is working, and it is keeping the fish away from most of the fish away from the Chicago area. We've had the one fish discovered on the wrong side of the mm-hmm. barrier, and that's a problem, no question. But it's not too late, and I think that because I am optimistic that because of all of the attention and all of the good-hearted and well-intended and the resources that are the good people that are working on this and the resources that are being devoted to it, I am optimistic that we'll be able to keep the fish out of the lakes.
All right. Thanks. That's Tim Eder, Executive Director of the Great Lakes Commission. Thank you for joining us. Also, thanks to Eugene Bragg from the OSU Stone Laboratory and John Navarro from the Ohio Division of Wildlife and Fisheries. This has been All Sides on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.